Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about books. And books mean two great people, two of my favorites. Cassie Rose is WOSU 89.7's book critic and maintains a blog called The Longest Chapter, which you should check out if you love books and even if you don't. And Kevin Griffith is a poet and a professor of creative writing at Capital University. And without them, none of us would be reading as well as we do. So welcome, both of you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you for giving up an hour and a pretty day to share some info about books. Father's Day is this weekend. I want to talk about some summer reading. I want to talk about some bestsellers and maybe one or two surprises. And you, Cassie, brought a book that I read a couple of years ago, and I don't remember enough about it, but I remember I couldn't put it down, called The Lock Artist, and you have it with you right now.
Yes, The Lock Artist by Steve Hamilton won the Edgar Award for Best Novel of the Year last year. And when it won, I wanted to read it, but didn't have time. And then the new award winner came out this year, and I bend in the road or something like that, bent road or something. And I thought, I still want to read The Lock Artist. So I picked it up, and as you said, I couldn't put it down. And I actually also had someone respond on The Longest Chapter and say that he picked it up after reading about it on The Longest Chapter and couldn't put it down. And then he said the resident teenager is how he referred to it. He said not only started it, but couldn't put it down. And it's a mystery, and it's narrated by an 18 to 20-year-old who doesn't talk. And he doesn't talk because he experienced a tragedy when he was 9 years old, which we don't find out about until the end of the book. But his skill set is that he can hack, basically, any lock, a safe lock, a closed or a locked house, a padlock, anything, which of course gets him in with the wrong crowd. So the story is pretty much about how he gets involved with it. He's, as a teenager, in love with a girl in high school, and her father really connects him to the bad people because he's a gambler and needs some way to satisfy the goons that are after him.
Didn't he live with an uncle in an abandoned kind of a shop or something?
Yes.
Like that? Yeah.
So you know that his parents, this tragedy involved, that his parents aren't around. But again, he doesn't tell you because it's obviously so traumatized him that he doesn't speak. But that's what's really neat about the novel, is because he's speaking to you, but all the characters in the book he's not talking to, and it's how he communicates with them, how he also gets into, like, undoing a lock, even though it's wrong and illegal, and his mindset about it, where it takes him, and also how he gets out of it. There is redemption at the end of the book, and you really feel for him, and it's also a surprise ending. At least it surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Have you read that book?
Yes, I read it a couple of years ago when it first came out. It is. It's brilliantly executed, mm-hmm. incredibly fast-paced, and mm-hmm. filled with tension. Just not the tension of all the action going on, but just the tension of his being tested on his lock-picking abilities is mm-hmm. is really marvelous. And you get an inside view as mm-hmm. to what that whole culture is like, that culture of lock-picking. And you're right, the ending, when it's revealed, I'm not going to, you know, reveal that, but talk about the ending or be a spoiler, but that ending is devastating, where we learn why he's not talking. And it's an amazing book.
Yeah. Who is Steve Hamilton? Had you known him before? Was this his first book? Or
no, he's well known in the genre, and I don't know him that well. This was my first of his work. So his first novel was called A Cold Day in Paradise, and it looks like that it won some awards too. So he's certainly someone to follow in this genre, mm-hmm. in this mystery and crime genre.
Okay, there you have it, folks. There's a novel that all three of us couldn't put down, called The Lock Artist by Steve Hamilton. That's mm-hmm. a nice beginning for our mm-hmm. program today. We will eventually hope that you will all be calling us in with your suggestions for summer reading or your response to some of the titles you're going to hear about, 292-8513. But Kevin and I, and I'm sure many of you out there are denizens of the Whetstone Library, without which probably we would all kind of drop dead. And there was a book on display there for weeks that I thought about and never picked up. And here's Kevin with it, saying it's one of the best books he's ever read, called A Gay and Melancholy Sound by Merle Miller. Now, I know Merle Miller because he wrote an oral history with Harry Truman that was very, very, about 40 years ago, very well received. It introduced Truman to people of my generation.
Yes. He wrote several biographies. This is a fascinating book on many levels. Number one, this is Nancy Pearl, who's NPR's like resident librarian and has her own show on the national NPR. This is part of her Book Lust Rediscoveries series. And so she's brought back books, her favorite novels that have long since been out of print. This was published in the 50s and had gone out of print. And working with Amazon Publishing, she's bringing them back. They're at a very low price, reasonable price. The print version's only $7.99 on Amazon. And you can also get them free if you own a Kindle and have Prime membership. So that's something. That's great that she's doing that. And I just picked this up because I had happened to hear something about it, and I didn't know anything about Merle Miller going into it. But this is an absolutely brilliant novel. Quite honestly, one of the probably top three novels I have ever read.
Coming from you, that's something.
Incredible. This Merle Miller is an incredible writer of just incredible capacity with intelligence. Every single page on this reveals something about what it means to live. I mean, this is the definition of a great novel. It's a really interesting idea for a novel, too. Of course, it's about Merle Miller, basically, but it's an autobiographical novel written from the point of view of this guy, Joshua Bland, who was a childhood prodigy. Everybody thought he had a terrible childhood, had a very controlling mother, it was terrible, basically child abuse, was used to win all sorts of intelligence contests. There was incredibly high expectations for him. This small town in Iowa, where he narrates a lot of the novel from or reflects upon, had built all their hopes that he was going to win this national intelligence contest and bring fame to this local little college and the town. He didn't. He ended up in 11th place. It devastated him, devastated his mother. He never got over it. Later, he became involved in sort of celebrity quiz shows, did that. But what he's doing here at the beginning of the novel, you realize that he's now a grown man. He's near the end of his life. He's going to commit suicide. And this is his 500-page note about his life, recollecting every little detail about his life and how he became who he was. And it's such a sad and funny. He's very witty. It's just filled with insights, but it's very sad that he was never able to emotionally connect with anybody. That's what's interesting.
Let me just make sure we have the title, A Gay and Melancholy Sound by Merle Miller. Now, you said this came out in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know if it had any notoriety in the 50s? Was it a big bestseller at the time?
I don't think so. And I think one of the... I don't think so. I don't know for sure, but I don't think it was Merle Miller's claim to fame, that's okay. For sure. It's very interesting now because everything that you read in this book is relevant today. All of his insights about culture, it's interesting. Almost nothing has changed. And we learn from the introduction that, you know, this is one of the great works of gay literature. Merle Miller was gay, and you'll see a lot of traces that in the agony that this Joshua Bland feels in his relationships to women and to other people and to his mother, the way his mother controlled him and was completely delusional about how he was going to help her achieve fame.
That'll be a Meryl Streep movie, I'm telling you, within 2 years.
Cassie, you said it's autobiographical, so it's fiction, but he's hiding behind the protagonist,
That's exactly right. He uses this protagonist to work through his own feelings, I think, his own feelings of alienation. Merle Miller did grow up in Iowa, went to a little Iowa college, that kind of thing, got a PhD in Iowa. It's just very close. I mean, the connection to Miller and to the protagonist in this novel is obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes it great, because it allows that voice to be believable. You don't get the sense whatsoever that this person's trying to pull anything over over your eyes, you know, that this is really a true voice longing to tell you a story, you know, longing to tell you a story about his life.
I assume, I don't know, but I assume that Merle Miller has gone to his reward.
Yes.
Okay. Because if you're listening, Merle, I'm sorry. But
he has several years ago.
But I remember
years ago.
Two things about him. I also remember that he came out at a time when one did not come out.
That's exactly
right. In the early 70s. And he wasn't, by any means, it wasn't the end of his life or career at the time. He was taking a real calculated risk in doing that. And this, thank you, and this came right on the heels of his Harry Truman book, which I think today for the main artist, his main audience, is probably his best-known work, which is
it was an oral
very well done, very, very well done indeed. I would encourage anybody to pick it up. Merle Miller, a gay and Melancholy Sound. And we have two recommendations already coming in on Facebook, and thank you. By all means, keep finding us on Facebook, All Sides Weekend. Sue recommends The Good Food Revolution by Will Allen, founder of Growing Power in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That would be a very good book to read for me to read, junk food maven that I am, because it would guilt me out to stopping, probably. And Linda on Facebook recommends Small Change, The Secret Life of Penny Buford by J. Belinda Yandell. She first read it a few years ago and reread it twice because she liked it so much. I like that when people, I mean, I do that too. I reread books. You know, I read A Confederacy of Dunces once a year. I don't know what the rest of you, but anyway. So by all means, you can contact us online at allsides@wosu.org or find us on Facebook or call us at 292-8513. What does the term summer reading mean? Does that have any meaning at all to the two of you?
I always think of it in terms of light reading. A lot of people are carrying the books in their, you know, their beach bags, but they're going to the pool or they're taking a lunch break outside and they want to read a book, or they're at night sitting on their porch. But I also think that it can be an involving book, like you've just talked about, A Gay and Melancholy Sound, because some summer readers want this sense of, I'm sitting on the porch, and this has happened to me, and it gets to be like 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's because I'm in an epic novel. It's not a light one, but it's epic, or it can even be a profound biography or something like that. I mean, I remember it was called A March into Sunlight. It was a book that was about an incident that happened in the Vietnam War, one incident, and this journalist compared it to the marches that were going on at the University of Madison in Wisconsin. It was so fascinating to me, and the next thing I knew, it was just like, it was 1 or 1:30 in the morning, I had a flashlight, and I was sitting rocking in my chair on my front porch.
That's the kind of book you live for. I love that,
So that's what frames my summer reading is. That's what I think.
Yeah, and with me, it's interesting. The summer, I bounce back and forth. I'll go from Merle Miller. The summer's great. It gives you time to reflect and really engage in a novel of this power, a real work of art. And so I'll go from Merle Miller, and then I'll bounce over to my favorite summertime writer, Joe Lansdale. And Joe Lansdale writes a detective series, the Hap Collins series.
Right.
Really interesting. Not a great writer, but completely escapist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Devil Red is what he came out with last summer. That was great if you liked, you know, just a lot of bar fighting and real bonding
on,
and stuff like this. His latest one that just came out this summer, Edge of Dark Water. This is great. This is a story about three people and a murder and a deliverance type ride down a raft in the river, and they confront this villain named Skunk, who's a crazy guy who's out to kill them. He's been hired to assassinate him. Just a lot of fun. Edge of Dark Water. Lansdale's great.
He sounds like Christmas Day with my parents. May they rest in peace. We have to take a break for a few seconds. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Stay where you are.
The Federal Election Commission just made it easier to donate to the presidential campaigns. You can do it via text. Just text the word comrade to donate to Obama, or text the word dressage to send money to Romney. I'm Peter Sagal. By simply listening to our show, you'll be donating $10 to the fund to keep Carl Castle in cardigans. So tune into this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. 78 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, warming up to a high of 86. Clear skies tonight and a low of 64. Sunshine on Saturday and a high of 87. And more sunshine on Sunday, just a slight chance of rain, a high of 85.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy here with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith talking about books, talking about summer reading, winter reading, everybody's reading. I have one book that I generally try to shut up on this show. I know that's funny to a lot of you, but I give it to the panel, to the experts. But I read a book recently called Father's Day. And since it is Father's Day on Sunday, I wanted to mention this book. It is a memoir. It's nonfiction by Buzz Bissinger, who is a sports writer and journalist who wrote Friday Night Lights, which was the wonderful study.
That's where
of,
I know the name. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. This is the story of a cross-country trip he took with his son, Zach, who was 28 years old at the time, and who was oxygen-deprived at birth and functions on the level of a 7-year-old. And he thought it would be an outstanding bonding experience. It was, but it was not in any way what he expected. He was confronted with Zach's limitations completely. And basically, this man fell in love with his adult son all over again. And I recommend it to anybody. It's a two-hanky book, yes, but it's also it's a real feel-good book, too, and it's wonderfully written. Father's Day by Buzz Bissinger. Get it for the dad in your life. I'm telling you, he won't put it down. He'll cry in the bathroom because he won't cry in front of you, but I'm telling you, this is a great book. So that's my bit. Here's a question for the two of you that dovetails into our light reading. I want you both, and I won't repeat it. I won't tell anybody what you said. Guilty pleasures. Guilty pleasure writer.
Guilty pleasure writer.
I so want Cassie Rose to love Jacqueline Suzanne. Boy, that dates me. But I mean, that's...
Well, I have a friend of mine that she's got a running bet for me. She wants me to talk about Danielle Steele or recommend a Danielle Steele book because that's a favorite of hers. Mm-hmm. A guilty pleasure.
I have one that comes to mind, and it is a guilty pleasure. I really like Richard Matheson, and one of the great summer reads. This book came out in the early 70s. But still, it's just great, great fun. Hell House. There, I said it. Hell House by Richard Matheson. He also wrote I Am Legend. That's probably his most famous novella about the vampires. He was on to vampires before
vampire.
It became a craze.
Okay.
But Hell House is a great story with a great premise. These four people are just offered a huge sum of money. I believe it's like $500,000 if they can just stay in the world's most famous haunted house for one night. That's what they have to do.
So Shirley Jackson did that.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly right. And it's just a load of fun. It's creepy, scary. You know, there's ectoplasm everywhere. People are levitating. So Hell House by Richard Matheson. I like to go back to that during the summer.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I have to say my guilty pleasure isn't a book. It's a video series or a movie or a TV series. I watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, there we go.
We're both guilty.
It is my break
and
from
this crowd.
I will guilty pleasure. I think I'm on the fourth time of watching it.
Well, I mean, let's ask the people out there too. If you're calling in, let us know your guilty pleasures as well. 292-8513. Just make sure it's something I can say on the air because we don't want to get into trouble here. We have a call from Phil in Newark. Hi, Phil. You're on.
Hi, I'm on my way to Newark. I just left New Albany. I enjoy reading travel books. I've just finished two by Paul Thoreau. One was Riding the Iron Rooster, which is, I think, his only train book I have not read yet. And then the other is Sunrise with Sea Monsters, which is the only collection of his that gets 5 stars in Amazon. Both terrific. And I've virtually enjoyed every book he has I've read.
Paul Thoreau, yes, he's been all over the world and writes compellingly about wherever he happens to be at the time.
Love Spain's like me.
Yeah, and Patagonia, I think, was another one that he wrote, too, about South America. Thank you very much, Phil, for the recommendation.
I have one question.
Yes.
He really raves in one of his essays about V.S. Pritchett, is it?
V.S. Pritchett, yes.
And what can you tell me about him?
Okay, let me get off the air and turn it over to the experts. Did he mean Naipaul? V.S. Naipaul was his mentor. And he wrote a memoir that's not very flattering about Naipaul. I think I may be right or wrong, I'm not sure, but I do recall a connection there. By the way, Paul Theroux's sister was my eighth grade English teacher in Lexington, Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Just so you know, yes. We have a call from Patricia in Gahanna. Hi, Patricia.
Patricia. How you doing?
Go ahead.
Okay, before I get to my book, my guilty pleasures are Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Oh, my goodness, that is so good. And The Price is Right. It's an hour of joy every single day. Whenever you're bored, just turn on or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, I'm going to segue everyone off to
pure
TV.
Joy. I cannot miss it. In fact, I'm missing it right now, so I have to.
Oh, well,
get
okay.
On my,
God. Okay.
I have a book for anyone who likes to garden and or cook. It's Tender, T-E-N-D-E-R, by the British food writer Nigel Slater, S-L-A-T-E-R. It's about his home vegetable garden. I know that doesn't sound exciting, but this book is absolutely fascinating. It's equal parts memoir, growing guide, and cookbook. He goes into great detail about different varieties of vegetables, how to grow them, what to pair them with, how to season them. And on every page, I'm just scribbling. Okay, I wonder if Oakland Nursery has I'll have to find more room in the backyard. Right. It's a fascinating book. 508 pages, but it goes quickly. And again, if you like to garden, if you like to cook, if you like to read about people gardening, fascinating.
And Tender, right?
Yes.
Tender.
And I got it from Whetstone on Monday, and I will be returning it within the next week or so.
Okay, people will hold you to that. Thank you, Patricia.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. Guilty Pleasures, Dominic Dunn. Mm-hmm. Listen, Dominic Dunn writes thinly disguised novels about real true life crime, like the Skakel murder in Greenwich, Connecticut, with Ethel Kennedy's nephew was convicted, and O.J., of course. And so if you want real wonderful trash that resonates, Dominic Dunn is my. Now, Cassie Rose, what can you tell me about Edmund White? I saw you brought an Edmund White book here.
Well, the gentleman that called in about the travel books, I just picked up his book, The Flaneur, which is a flaneur is a loiterer, a walker through, and he's using this in terms of Paris and his walk through Paris. And I've just started it, but I'm really captivated by it, by the details and what he's writing about Paris and all the small things about it that you find when you walk through it, as well as comparisons to Americans and Parisians. And right now, we seem to have such a resurgence of a love for Paris in all of the
I wonder why. I mean, yeah.
Well, all the and people reading the books about it, whether fiction or nonfiction. And so I just recommend this if someone is looking for a travel book about Paris or just wanting to read about Paris, because the voice is so light and conversational, and he writes in a way that doesn't, you know, get too heavy at all. And it just some of the marvelous things, like the details that Parisians do not like the smell of food. And whereas Americans, we relate, you know, baking bread or turkey or whatever, the smell in the house, and Parisians don't like that at all. And the history of some man who was fabulously wealthy, probably in the 19th or 18th century, and had a train bring food to his house or some vehicle bring it so that he wouldn't have to have the smell. But it was a very popular book and a bestseller when it came out probably about 10 years ago. But if it's a good book to look at.
He lived in Paris for many years.
Did.
He may still, I don't know. But a lot of his books are based there. And one of my memories of my student backpacking in Paris was coming down the steps of the Paris Opera into the street. And the first thing you see is what they would call a pissoir, and I will leave it alone there, but it's something that probably we could use more of here in the States, but they're very convenient, and the contrast within 5 minutes of where I had been and to where I needed to go was very exciting, you know. 292-8513 is the number. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or find us on Facebook. We want to know what you're reading. Guilty pleasures are always fun to talk about as well. And what is a roadside picnic?
Oh, another possible guilty pleasure, another interesting story behind this book. Roadside Picnic. This is one of the most famous underground science fiction novels ever written. It's a Russian novel. It came out about 30 years ago, went out of print for many, many years, has been brought back by a Chicago Review Press. Roadside Picnic has a really interesting premise. What has happened is it's a science fiction novel, very fast read, engaging. I'm not usually a science fiction fan, but what has happened is aliens have visited the Earth, and they left garbage in six zones in around the planet. And one of these zones is in Canada, and so the government has cordoned off this huge zone, and no one's supposed to go in there. But it's narrated from the point of view of someone who's works as what is called a stalker. And a stalker is someone who secretly goes into the zones and pulls out some of the junk to sell on the black market. And it's really interesting. And they can't explain what some of these things are, like there are rings that perpetually spin, and some of the other things they run into are extremely dangerous. They cause your bones to dissolve and that kind of thing if you run into the wrong material. It's brilliantly done, and of course this stalker, we read about his life, and he starts as a young man, and of course he's trying to like stop doing this, but he has to support his family, so he keeps getting greater and greater pressure to go in there. And there's supposed to be one of the pieces of debris that's left that is sort of a legend among the stalkers is there's supposed to be this large egg-like object that will grant any wish you have. And so that it ends with them trying to find that and wondering if they've been misled. I would strongly recommend Roadside Picnic. I heard about it from one of my students. One of my students said it was his favorite novel, and he wrote a paper about it, and then I just happened to see it at the Whetstone Library. And if you have a teenage son who needs something to read, I would go with this. Very fascinating, and it was actually used as the basis for a video game, the Stalker video game.
Who are the writers?
It is written by Russian brothers, Arkady and Boris Strugatsky. Boris, I believe, is still alive. And he has a really interesting essay at the end of this about what the Soviet censors tried to do with this when it came out, all the trouble they had publishing it, and all the things that the Soviets said were, you know, censor material that would, like, corrupt the minds of the youth and that kind of thing. It was ridiculous sentences that had to be taken out, you know. If you called someone an idiot, if a character said, you idiot, that had to be taken out because that was against the, you know,
it made the
Soviet Union look bad or something like that. Roadside Picnic, I would strongly recommend that.
Thank you very much for that suggestion. Mark in Westerville has been waiting, wants to talk to us about Robin Hood. Hello, Mark.
Hey there. Hello.
Go ahead.
Good to talk to you. Hey, I love to read during the summer, but if somebody would like to hear a story or see a story presented, I recommend Robin Hood. That's going on in Schiller Park this weekend and next weekend.
Well, we're good to know about that. That's our friends at Actors Theatre, right?
That's right.
Right. I'm waiting for John Kuhn to return an email from me, just so you know. But Robin Hood at Schiller Park, we thank you very much for that.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Little plug there for Actors Theater. I don't mind doing that because they do wonderful things. One book that I want to just bring up is, if you're a John Irving fan, John Irving, in my opinion, has had a kind of a dry patch for the last few years. He's back. Mm-hmm. His new novel is called In One Person, and I'm in the middle of it now, and he's the John Irving we love. He's the warm-hearted, almost childlike storyteller. All of his checkpoints are there. Wrestling, cross-dressing Vermont, all the things at Vienna, all the things that he's always thrown in the pot are there, but they're very different and very original. So that's another good gift book by John Irving, who I tried to get on this show, by the way. I'm ambitious, and I'm still getting there, in one person. Another great Paris book, my favorite, is A Movable Feast, Hemingway's last book, which is not really a fiction book, is it? But it's a wonderful, wonderful book. We have a call from Vi in Columbus, who wants to talk about Gail Caldwell. Hello, Vi.
Yes. My recommendation is a book, Let's Take the Long Way Home, A Memoir of Friendship. It's by Gail Caldwell, who I believe is a book reviewer for the Boston Globe.
Oh, yes, that's where I know the name from, yes.
Okay, and it talks about the very best, that is, of friendship, of women friendship in this case, and the precious things they would give back to one another. It's a memory of loss. She talks about her friend Carolyn Knapp, who is also a writer, but it's a beautiful book.
Right, and I think Carolyn
Knapp. This was her friendship with Carolyn Knapp. Yeah, this is coming. Carolyn Knapp wrote two wonderful books before she passed away.
Right.
Yes, it was Alcoholism, and then the second was with her bonding with her German Shepherd dog.
Yes, and this book, Let's Take the Long Way Home, the dogs, their dogs, play a very major part in the story. I mean, it's nonfiction, but it's a great book, and it's very well written. Mm-hmm. I think it was one of the top 10 books of the year from Time magazine.
Yes, and Carolyn Knapp's books also hit the bestseller list and were also highly recommended, which I read both of them. They're very, very good.
I actually know Gail Caldwell now that you mentioned that, and she, she's been a mainstay at the Boston Globe for years, and Caroline Knapp with a K, by the way, is a terrific name. Thank you so much, Vi, for the recommendation.
Okay, goodbye.
Thank you. We have a couple of emails. Tom in Waverly recommends a historical fiction book called The Blue Asylum, by Kathy Heppenstall, which is about the Civil War, which is something I'm going to look for. Mm-hmm. And also, Elise recommends The Orchard. She writes to us, it's an amazing book, which is actually a memoir, but reads like a novel. I don't have the author's name here, but I'm sure that's easy enough to find, The Orchard. Another one, a teen book, Miss Peregrine's School for Peculiar Children. That sounds good, too. And her guilty pleasure is James Lee Burke's crime mystery series with Dave Robichaux. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, Elise, for those recommendations. If you'd like to send us a recommendation, ask a question, or give us your guilty pleasure, you know you have one, 292-8513, allsides at WOSU.org, or you can find us on Facebook, and we have Richard on the phone. I think Richard has a guilty pleasure for us. Hello, Richard.
Good morning. How are you, Jim?
Good, thank you.
And ladies. I wanted to recommend a series of books, really, by an author by the name of Donald Goines. They're crime novels. And among the unique things about Donald Goines is his skill among those, by the way, as a writer. But he actually lived the life of the ghetto that he portrays in his books, and he eventually died in violence. Mm. But they are very nitty-gritty, very real to life when you read them. And a strange thing is that when I've mentioned them to some people, people in the bar scene, they have heard of him in jail.
Oh, well, okay. That's sort of a recommendation right there. Donald, you spell it. How do you spell his last name? Do you know, Richard?
Yes. Donald Goines, G-O-I-N-E-S.
Terrific. Thank you so much for the recommendation. That's somebody who's going to be new to me, but that sounds like it's worth checking out. We have to take a break. We'll be back in 90 seconds, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. Keep your calls coming, 292-8513. Don't go away.
Henry Hill, the former mobster portrayed by Ray Liotta in the film Goodfellas, died Tuesday. On the next Fresh Air, we'll listen back to an interview with Nick Pileggi, who wrote the book about Hill's life, Wise Guy, which he adapted into the movie Goodfellas. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 80 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 86. Clear skies tonight, a low of 64 degrees. Sunshine on Saturday with a high of 87, and partly cloudy Saturday night, a low of 67 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from OSU's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information at glenn.osu.edu.
If you contributed to 89.7 NPR News this year, thank you. Your support provides for the highest quality news and information. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th, and we still have about $50,000 to raise to meet our annual goal. If you wish to make an additional gift or fulfill your current gift, you can do so at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678. And thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News. And All Sides Weekend continues.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy, back with you with All Sides Weekend, talking about books today with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We're talking about all kinds of heavy, detailed books, as usual. We're talking also about guilty pleasures, and we want to know yours. We've told you ours, so it's only fair that... switching gears for a second, Kevin, when we were off mic, you were talking about... We were talking a bit about prison writers, apropos of our last call. And what is the series you mentioned?
Well, there are two really famous prison writers that come to my mind, and they both wrote fiction. We talked about Ed Bunker last show. Ed Bunker's most famous novel is No Beast So Fierce, and it was made into a movie called Hard Time with Dustin Hoffman in the 70s. And then the other writer, the other great writer prison and people in prison would know him would be Chester Himes, the African-American author. Chester Himes wrote A Rage in Harlem, and he wrote a whole series of books with the same characters in them. And Himes is fantastic. His work is great, highly readable, engaging. And again, I'll make a plug for you can get all of Himes' e-books from the public library for free and put them on your Kindle or your Nook or your e-reader. They're all there and they're easy to get.
In case you haven't noticed, Kevin got a Kindle recently, a $79 Kindle, which looks terrific. And I'm the biggest Luddite that ever lived. I can barely change a light bulb. You're starting to convert me because it's like one more thing you have to learn. And I'm too old. I mean, come on. What did you say earlier, Cassie? I just want to read a book.
I just want to read a book, and it's just that the American way is to provide a gluttony of choices in everything that we
That's
do.
Right.
I mean, oh my gosh, you know, you want to buy a shirt and you walk into a department store and there are millions of choices. Well, here you want to just read a book and you want to read a good book and you have, and some people only have a small amount of time. So we just bludgeon them with the choices and the ways to read them now. So they do, should they just go to Barnes & Noble and buy the book? Should they get a Kindle? If they get a Kindle, they're going to find they can't get the book that they saw at Barnes & Noble because it's not being offered yet on the e-book reader.
I'm with you.
Or you go to the library and then you want a book and you find out, well, it's out of print. Well, now, as Christopher, you've shared an article with us, you can go to some independent bookstores and you can use the robot or the espresso machine and get it printed off, which actually is a good way to be able to get out of print books, but it's the gluttony of choices, and I think a lot of people are going to step away. It's going to be too daunting.
Well, I mean, if Kevin's into it, though, I'm leaning. That's pretty good. And he got David Copperfield for free, you know. Things like that out of public domain are free. So that's good to know. We still want your calls. We've got a couple of people waiting. 292-8513. Don't forget you can email at allsides@wosu.org. Or find us on Facebook. Kelly has a recommendation, and maybe this is a guilty pleasure as well, and it's something that we've talked about before. Hi, Kelly.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi. The recommendation is going to be definitely Sidney Sheldon. He's one of my favorite.
Good for you.
You know, writers, and I had to stop his book because of everybody talking about 50 Shades of Grey.
Here we go.
And, oh, my gosh. At first, I love to read one book at a time, but I didn't want it to be ruined, so I had to stop everything and read that book, and, you know, it's, like, interfering with everything. My boyfriend's in my face, like, come on, let's go do something. I'm like, yeah, just a minute.
Do your parents know you're reading 50 Shades of Grey?
I think... like a child now, so I think I'm okay in there.
Okay, well, shame on you. Well, enjoy it, and thank you for calling. Thank you. Bye-bye. We have Bia from Columbus recommending a book by Christopher Moore. Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Bia.
You're on.
Hi. Yes, this is actually a pleasure that turned out to be guiltier than I anticipated. But Christopher Moore's new book, Sacre Bleu, is just delightful. It has his trademark sarcasm and irony, but twisted into late 19th century France. It's all about the gritty underground of the art world, and I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you so much. That does sound good. Thank you, Bia, for that recommendation. Christopher Moore, that's a name new to me as a writer. Does it resonate with either of you? No?
I think that that book, Sacre Bleu, came out with some fanfare around it. I know that in the previews, it was highly praised, and it came out with critics
Christopher Moore,
going for it.
He's a really prolific writer, and he always does that. His books are always based in some time period and usually make literary allusions to Shakespeare and other things. He did one about Yorick, for instance. Yeah. He wrote a book about that.
Oh, and we haven't talked about Hilary Mantel yet. Her new book, Bring Up the Bodies, about Anne Boleyn's final days. He wrote Wolf Hall, which won the Man Booker Prize. She wrote, pardon me.
Well, and she's following the life of Thomas Cromwell with this. So, you know, she's obviously got a series going here. A lot of people loved Wolf Hall. A lot of them found it was also, though, pretty dense. And
she is dense,
she
yes.
Is. She is. I don't know that she's a summer book.
Well, I mean, if you're dense, you'll love it. I had a great time with it, but that may not be my important. What is the book you have there, Cassie, by Peter Carey?
Peter Carey's The Chemistry of Tears. It's his new book, just recently out, and it's a wonderful book that's about a conservator at a London museum, and she's suddenly learned that her lover of 13 years has died unexpectedly, and theirs was a secret love affair at the museum, and so she's isolated in her grief. And her lover's best friend, comes and gives her a project to get her mind off of things, and it's what's called an automaton from the 19th century. It's a machine that she has to clean up and reveal, and it's a duck. I mean, she knows that from the outset, and what comes with it is many notebooks that the person back then, the father that was getting it created for his son, has written. So there's this story from the 19th century going on, and then there's this story in the present with Catherine, who really goes off the deep end. I mean, she's getting drunk every night on vodka because she just can't handle her grief, and she's taking the notebooks from the museum, and she's taking other artifacts, and you really get connected to Catherine in her stories, and you get connected to this mystery about this duck that this father is building in for his son, and it takes place in Germany and England. Peter Carey has done his typical fine job with this. He's an author that's going to be, or already is, in the canon of literary greats. He won the Booker Prize for Oscar and Lucinda, which many may recognize.
That's
for it was
movie,
made into a
right,
movie,
yeah.
Correct? He also won it for The True History of the Kelly Gang, and then several of his books have been shortlisted. I mean, he's one of those guaranteed good reads
real
when
deal.
His book comes in. Yeah, he's the real deal.
We have a recommendation from Angela on Facebook of a book called Hitless Wonder by Worthington native Joe Osterreich. That's her summer reading recommendation. Mm-hmm. It's about the early days of Joe's band that played around the OSU campus. Kevin, you gave me a nod that...
Yeah, I think the band's name was Watershed. I read about this, and he's an interesting guy. That band was very big. They warmed up for some really, really big groups. And now he's a creative writing professor
at
Coastal Carolina College, and I've read some of his short stories that have been published in little journals with my work. I think that's really interesting. It's called One Hit Wonder.
Hitless Wonder.
Hitless Wonder, yes. Yeah.
And Scott on Facebook is a man after my own heart because he's read Moonlight Mile by Dennis Lehane because he loved the movie Gone Baby Gone, which was based on that. I want to read more, especially since I just got back from Boston, and I love his descriptions of the city and having been born there. Scott, I'm with you. So thank you very much for that. Peggy from Columbus has been waiting patiently to talk about A Venetian Affair. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. This particular book you may be familiar with, but it's a true tale of forbidden love in the 1700s, and obviously takes place in Venice. And what was the most captivating about this book was that the book is basically comprised of letters
by two different people that were from two different social strata, and they were not allowed to have a relationship. And so the communication was done all through letters. And years later, these letters turned up in an attic in Venice, and then another family found the other letters, one from the woman, one from the man. And the interesting part of this is that this love affair goes on, but the woman becomes a prolific writer, and you can continue to see her writing about Paris in the, in the mid-1700s.
And this is called The Venetian Affair.
Yes, by Andrea di Robillon.
Terrific.
And it's probably the best book I've ever read, because it's just from the pen of these people dating back to the 1700s.
Thank you, Peggy, very much for that recommendation. I'll look forward
You're
to
welcome.
That. Thank you. And Daniel's on the phone from Columbus, and I love this. Daniel is calling in to tell us about Kinky Friedman. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got into Kinky Friedman a while ago. That sounds really bad, but I loved his book, Elvis, Jesus, and Coca-Cola. And just love that whole private eye sort of noir theme, and think it's a great selection for Father's Day weekend.
You're right with that. Tell us about a little about Kinky Friedman.
Kinky is sort of an uncouth, very classic sort of brash writer. The humor is sometimes dirty, but always funny. Mm-hmm. It's a Jewish cowboy private
right.
eye.
It's a Jewish cowboy, right.
In a band, yeah.
Who plays in a band with... a very interesting name, and
thank you. Yes,
and they, I think Kinky is a very interesting person in general. Didn't he recently run for governor of Texas?
He did. Yes. Yeah. He ran against Ann Richards. In fact, yeah. Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, I have an autographed book from him, and it's the best inscription I've ever had in a book. It said, Kevin, see you in hell or Columbus.
Even so, we will recommend Kinky Friedman. Daniel, thank you very much. I know Kinky Friedman used to be a guest with Don Imus on his morning show. It was hysterical, the two of them. Mm-hmm. And I can't really repeat some of the things that Kinky Friedman would say on that radio show. But for Father's Day, he is a lot of fun.
Yes, I strongly recommend him.
Very, very well done. 2928513. We have a couple of lines open. We have about 8 minutes left. You can also email at allsides@wosu.org or find us on Facebook, as many people are doing today, which is wonderful. Thank you for that. Kevin, give me another recommendation.
I wanted to recommend this is kind of going from Kinky Friedman to this book is a little strange leap, but again, this was a great story here. Just stumbled upon this book in the new book section at Whetstone Library. Didn't think I would like it, but I picked it up anyway.
They need to pay us, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
It's brand new, just came out this month. It's called The Taliban Cricket Club. The Taliban Cricket Club by Timari Mirari. Excellent book. It's based, as they say, it's based on a true story. The Taliban in the year 2000 actually did try to join the International Cricket League. They thought it would bring dignity and respect to the Taliban. Mm-hmm. And so they tried to organize a national cricket team. And this is the story of a woman who actually went to college in Pakistan and learned how to play cricket. And, of course, women are prohibited.
Right, they don't. Yes.
Obviously, they can't even go outside and be seen. So she dresses very Shakespearean. She dresses as a man. She's able to dress as a man and coach this cricket team. And if they win this tournament, they get to play in Pakistan. So what she does, she knows, is if they win this tournament, they can go to Pakistan and then flee
right,
to come,
yeah.
get away and come to America. It's just it's both fun and terrifying at the same time, because you're rooting for, it's the typical sports type novel. You're rooting for them to get through this tournament, but you're also witnessing just the horrific things the Taliban did, especially to women. Mm-hmm. So you learn a little bit about the whole Taliban culture, the history of Afghanistan from about 2000 to 2004. He lived in Afghanistan for a while. Interviewed a lot of people. You're learning that without it being heavy-handed or being browbeaten by it. And you're also just reading a really great story with an incredibly interesting female protagonist. I'd strongly recommend this. Very, very good. A page-turner, The Taliban Cricket Club by Timari Mirari.
Thank you very much for that recommendation. And we have Paul from Worthington on the line with a recommendation. Hello, Paul.
Hello, honored host. I recommend a book called The Poisoner's Handbook. And I think you may even have discussed this at some point. It sounds like really exciting, but it's not. But it's not boring. It's the It's the birth essentially of forensic medicine in New York City around 1900 to 1930, in which a very dedicated group of doctors sought out information on why people died, and this goes back to some really corrupt Tammany Hall, what have you, kind of things. The protagonist, and this is not a novel, the protagonist actually took his own income to pay for an assistant who he felt was, you know, a very qualified chemist when the city hall would not deign to give him enough money to do it. He would pay for his own cab rides to arrive at crime scenes. It's fascinating because it goes through everything from, you know, husbands poisoning wives and vice versa, and it goes through the horrors of Prohibition, in which, you know, it, probably 80% of any drink anybody took in New York, and there were plenty of drinkers in New York, was in some fashion poison. It's a great read, and as I said, it's not a novel. Somebody did a lot of research on this, and I'm sorry I don't recall the author's name, but that's my recommendation.
I think it's Deborah Blum, is that right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, The Poisoner's Handbook, and I wouldn't have dinner with her. But thank you so much for that,
right,
Paul.
No,
I appreciate
it's a great read.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And Ed from Hilliard is waiting. Hello, Ed.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, Rex Stout and Nero Wolfe series is a guilty pleasure.
Nero Wolfe, yeah, sure, of course, yes. All right, that's good to know, too. What about that did you like?
Just his use of language.
Okay.
And the fact that it has an Ohio connection, since Archie is from Chillicothe, of course.
Well, that's a good reason, too, Ed. That's Rex Stout and his Nero Wolfe series, which people, TV viewers know that as well, if you're of a certain age. But thank you very much. We appreciate that recommendation. We have 3 minutes left, so if you have a quick recommendation for us, be quick about it. But how about Cassie? What do you have? You bring in the most good-looking books, so I have to ask you about the one right
this
there.
This one, yes. The Year of the Gadfly by Jennifer Miller. It's her first novel, and this is a terrifically fun book to read. It's in quick summary, it's about Iris, who is a 14-year-old in a prep school. She's an aspiring journalist, and she sees the specter of Edward R. Murrow, who is the famous journalist from the 50s and 60s. And, of course, there are all sorts of things going on in this prep school because there's a vigilante group that is trying to get the administration to uphold to the brotherhood, equality, and truth that is supposed to be followed, and they are not doing that. And so there's a lot of back and forth about she's trying to investigate who's behind this vigilante group. She's very fun, very funny. There are several other viewpoints in this because also involved in the mystery of the vigilantes is the biology teacher. And he is an alum of the prep school, and something happened his sophomore year with his twin brother. And so you go back with that too. It's light reading. It's a fun page turner. There's a lot going on, and she does it very, very well. She connects everything very well.
You bring in a lot of books that you say are wonderful, and they are, and people discover them that way. How do they get to you? How do you discover them?
With this book, that's an interesting question because this came to me through Twitter. The author saw that I had reviewed Malarkey by Anacona Schofield, and Anacona Schofield had Twittered about it. So this author saw that, came to the blog, sent me a tweet and said, would you take a look at this? And she had her publisher, which is Harcourt, it's HMH, I forget, it's Mifflin, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. She had them send it to me.
And
so that's how it got to me.
Your blog is the longest chapter.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And well worth a read it is. Do you have any last thoughts for us, Kevin Griffith?
Just to go back to and mention it again, A Gay and Melancholy Sound by Merle Miller. Definitely a great rediscovery. Do yourself a favor and read it.
And my last recommendation, my last plug is, again, for Buzz Bissinger's memoir, Father's Day, since it's coming up. Even if it wasn't coming up, you'll love that book. Thank you very much, Cassie Rose. Kevin Griffith, thank you all for calling. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thanks to producer Linda Taylor, associate producer Amy Jurevich, All Sides intern Corinne Gleckler, and our volunteers Rachel Ramey and Andrew Sweet. Thank you. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from OSU's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information at glenn.osu.edu.